Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I have a very special guest with me today. She is Monet Lewis of Monet Lewis Consulting, LLC. She is a doctoral candidate for educational leadership and is currently working on her dissertation in financial literacy education. Welcome, Monet. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much, Susan, for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, you've got a lot of important stuff to share with our listeners. I'm sure there are a lot of parents out there who have young students, high school students, college students, who might already be getting into debt. What can you tell them about that?
Yes. So what I can say is that debt, or even just the decision to pursue education, post-secondary education, is an important decision, and it's a family decision. And it comes to a point where folks will have to prioritize all of their expenses, essentially. And sometimes education can be one of those pieces where it's not a debate. We do need it, or maybe not at this point. And so when you, parent, or even just a supporter of a learner who's looking to pursue further education, and they have identified that, start having the conversation as soon as possible about all the costs that requires of them. And in my research thus far for financial literacy education for college learners is that the cost for education is beyond just the tuition. It is transportation, your lifestyle. How much does books cost? And what are some of the things that you would like to do to make sure you're still taking care of yourself, like self-care, mental health support?
Oh, yeah.
Friendship, socializing, going abroad, or travel in general, or just even following up on certain hobbies to help you get through, because it's a new lifestyle that learners have to be prepared for. How often are you going to return home or make trips? Are you going to school down the road? Are you attending your local community college, or are you going to a four-year that is further down the road, and who knows how far? What does that take? What does that entail?
You know, with the cost of higher education just skyrocketing, how early does a family have to start thinking about this? And what do you recommend for ways to prepare? I know there are special accounts that people can create for their kids' education. When does a person start those, and are they effective?
I would say because the price of higher education is increasing every year, start the conversation, start the saving soon as the conception of said child, or even the decision to have a dependent of some sort. And I will also say that this advice is not only for folks that have learners that are under the age of 25. This can apply to parents who want to become students and return to school, or have now set that time because they had folks leave the nest, essentially, and they can pour back into themselves. So having the thought process and financing as early as possible is never too early, because we never know the full cost of it based on what the circumstances are in that time of that year. And also do some more research about resources that can help alleviate some of those costs. So,
yeah, I had a question about that, because particularly for adults who might be returning to either complete their degrees or amplify their degrees, are there grants or loans that are at a reasonable rate that people like that can access?
Yes. And it's constantly changing. Essentially, the state or even federal-based programs, when available, they will roll out programs targeting certain populations to encourage more folks to go to school, especially when we're talking about adults that are considering upskilling because of maybe loss of job or even just wanting to get that better promotion or a better title, better position to support their family. Their employers may be investing in their employees and have programs to allow folks to complete coursework during the workday.
Hmm.
Or partnering learning institutions will have programs where they can support tuition and fees, and it will be up to that particular learner, adult learner in this case, to compensate for the additional needs like childcare, transportation. And then there's also programs that an institution or even local community-based organizations that can help supplement some of that, like childcare, emergency funding for a vehicle emergency, for example. And they'll have like stipends for like $500. In terms of loans, certainly need to get more experts in that, because you really want to vet that, vet all of your options. And I am seeing a lot more of community-based organizations that are leading the charge for financial literacy education and having financial coaches and employment coaches in learning centers to help folks with all decisions when it comes to finance in their life, including education and paying for all their expenses.
And it sounds to me like you're moving beyond paying for education. When I hear the term financial literacy, I think about young people in their daily lives. How does a parent train a young person to create a budget, to avoid debt or excessive debt, to plan for their financial needs? What is the first thing you think parents should be doing with their kids to teach them how to handle money?
I think the first thing that parents should do to teach their children how to handle money is to involve the children in all decisions as possible. So that way they can understand why their guardians are making such decisions or saying no to this, because there's a later cost benefit. Like, for example, a child may want to take up a particular sport. However, the parent has been paying tuition for a pre-college academy for this learner to help them get into a better opportunity for a post-secondary education. Well, parent, please express what are the costs for that and how that price for that particular after school sport might offset, and maybe how can they supplement it? If the child is very adamant about it, are they willing to pick up a small position? And that can be within the household, like trading chores for a couple of dollars. I remember my first allowance was like $5 and I would wash dishes on Mondays. For example, but really just getting children involved as much as possible in all those decisions for paying for things. If you notice that your child has a knack for math, include them in when you're filing your taxes.
Why
wait until they become an adult and they're trying to figure it out on their own? And if they become more familiar with the practice and all those self-sufficient tools like TurboTax, for example, or even H&R Block, how they have the profile where you can set up and they have the tools and resources, then they're already starting to become more self-sufficient and be comfortable. And it's not much of a panic of, okay, I'm no longer in the household. I went away for school, or I went down the block from the school. My mom and dad or my guardian is not available. Who can I talk to? And I probably never even experienced socializing with other professionals to the point to hire and book a service. They can rely back on that background. So just getting them involved in all of the household decisions where appropriate, because as we're learning, there isn't a particular institution that is going to definitively claim that responsibility. It's
That's true.
Yeah.
They don't learn that stuff in school.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that can make or break their financial success in life. What got you into this in the first place? What made you, Monet Lewis, interested in teaching people about financial literacy?
For me, it was my financial trauma or activation of being in a poverty, in a poverty environment. So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York,
mm-hmm.
and I was in a household that depended on public assistance and support. I also grew up in foster care. And wow. So coming out of that, there was a lot of statistics pointed against me of not being able to be successful and realizing that I didn't want this to be the end of my story. And one thing my parents always instilled in me is getting your education. And I ran with that achievement. And as I was doing that, I realized my parents weren't going to be able to help support me in this. This was a decision I made on my own to go away to school
mm-hmm.
and to pay for it. So I had to figure that out. And I leaned on my community. There was a program in my high school called College Bound Achievers. And it was ran by the high school level dean. And on Saturdays, they would teach students how to complete their free application for federal student aid and able to talk to individuals that went away for school or stayed locally or even entered the workforce, like police officers, fire department folks. And as I was learning as much as possible about college and how different individuals navigate it, I started to build this network of information. And I was just so consumed with it that I felt confident that I can go on and get my own education, and went on to going for my bachelor's, master's, and then doctorate. In my doctorate program, I found myself working in leadership positions, and particularly in community colleges. And as a community college administrator, some of the work that you have to do is report on supports that are given to learners, how that is impacting them. And there may be rollouts of some of those programs I mentioned of mm-hmm. supporting individuals in a particular population. And when I was doing that, I was essentially getting frustrated because I'm like, I haven't really learned this in particularly. It's you're learning through experience and the deadline keeps coming up, but I'm chasing around different individuals to try to get these answers. I'm like, how can we get more support for community colleges in this process? And that's when I started to learn more about financial literacy. And I figured that this would be an opportunity to just centralize on this one focus and how it can be easier to help learners get through their education if we can provide more insight. And I knew that I was only getting a fraction of that story. So like, okay, how can I get more stories about this? How can I get more information? Who do I need to speak to? And at that point, when I had this recollection, I was in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole different state, whole different set of programs, different students, different community and
different
needs.
From New York.
Different from New York and now different from Washington.
Yeah.
So starting over and trying to learn that landscape and realizing what programs are available, that's how I started to dig deeper and get really fascinated and my program is on educational leadership. And so identifying a program of interest for your study and how you essentially are making a mark in the corner of research and community colleges was really not discussed much for financial literacy education. Financial literacy education, period, is not discussed as much. It's newish.
I don't hear a lot about it, period. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that comes to my mind is you have managed to get at least 2 degrees and you're working on a third. How did you personally finance all that?
I'm still financing it.
Okay.
but yes, I can speak more to it. So I do have student loan debt, and it's primarily for my bachelor's.
Uh-huh.
Because I went away to school. I was a resident for 5 years. So my 4 years of undergraduate, I went straight into graduate school. So my first year of grad school, and then the last 2 years, I was living off campus. So primarily for housing. For my master's program, I was able to apply and secure a graduate assistantship that paid for my tuition.
Good. So, yeah.
So now this is my research interest and just passion in general for financial literacy education is a cautionary tale as well. Like, I believe going to grad school was my second chance of kind of doing it more responsibly, being more responsible financially, or just making more conscious decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So federally financial loans for first degree, second degree using my essential scholarship because of assistantship. So that's paid for. And then I was responsible for the fees and I worked on campus. I always had a job, and my first jobs were working at a mall, working in the restaurant industry, working odd jobs like being an usher for our performing arts theater, working in peer mentoring, and just having so many different positions to be able to help supplement all the costs. And then in my third degree or third aspiration of getting my doctorate, I'm self-paying. Ooh. Yes, it is a hefty bill, but I still just look in awe about the growth because it is a huge investment. And because of the education, because of the community of folks that poured into me and having that wherewithal to be able to start paying on my student loans, having that support for my assistantship so that way I didn't have even more loans adding on to it.
Right.
That I was able to secure professional roles to be able to offset. It definitely requires me to live more conservatively.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm looking at a location, I'm identifying how much can I afford my rent, utilities,
mm-hmm.
Transportation, having fun, going back to that self-care, being able to go home, how often generally is holiday season for me. And that's how I'm able to pay it and still paying. And whenever there are scholarship opportunities, because there are scholarships for graduate students too, I apply for them regardless of how much they are, because it does help out. And so in 2024 and 2025, I was an awardee for an endowed scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And there are individuals that design funding for folks that are pursuing long terminal degrees.
Terminal degrees. That sounds a little scary. You're listening to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. My guest is Monet Lewis, who is writing a dissertation on financial literacy education. Monet, clearly you are highly motivated and your life experience is informing whatever it is you're going to be writing in your dissertation. Can you, in one sentence, describe what your dissertation is about?
Yes.
Is there a title?
No title, but the cornerstone of the research question that keeps running through my mind is, how can financial literacy education enhance the financial well-being of learners in their career progress, personal growth, and overall happiness.
And how would you apply that research to a person's life beyond their education? How would you be teaching adults, people like me, who are older, who are living their lives and may be struggling financially? What sort of advice would you give to people in their everyday lives?
The advice I would give people in their everyday lives, post-education or just living now, mm-hmm. is understanding what you're spending money on, right? Developing a budget. Reach out to your local community and identify if there are any financial advisors or coaches.
Oh.
Or there are now a lot of online tools that can help you to learn more about financial literacy education. Goodwill has a program for adults. United Way has a program. And you can go there. You can speak to the coaches that are available, or you can opt to learn on your own at your own pace and then watch on-demand videos and start with those basics and try to understand if you do need a new credit card, for example, uh-huh. or if you do need a loan. And I will say some of the programs can come off as they're trying to sell you a product. Stay away from the product. Don't buy the product unless you're someone that's really passionate about Bitcoin or just investing, but really just trying to understand what you're spending on the day to day. I think that is just the simple basics. And then also make sure that you are paying yourself first in whatever you are doing. So if you have an income, a steady income, make sure you have some money depositing into a savings account, mm-hmm. preferably a high yield savings account where you can get interest based on what you're spending on and take advantage of those perks of like, oh, you went to a gas station this month or you bought groceries, or even if you know that you like to travel, getting a travel credit card that can help pay you for doing the things that you like to do or your daily things, and making sure that you are paying off those particular cards, whatever your savings account is, not touching it or determine what that purpose is. If this is my savings account for travel, you have that. If you have a savings account for emergency funding, then only touch it for emergency funding. I think those are the basics where you can do on your own, or you can reach out to support within the community and just being mindful of what you're taking on. That, I believe, is the minimum that can be done, so that way it's not overwhelming and not adding more to your plate with already a lot of decisions mm-hmm. in life post-education. And that's the cornerstone of what my research is going to be on, and trying to understand how I can help individuals alleviate the challenge, or even just like the overwhelmingness of understanding finances. Like, I certainly have moments where I'm like, I don't even want to look at the balance.
Yeah, on the credit card. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And how do I keep that balance low? How do I choose a credit card company that is going to give me or charge me the lowest interest rate? Or I'm really cheap. I feel like I have to pay them off every month. I don't want to give them any interest. Mm-hmm. Is that a smart way to go?
It is what I'm learning. I actually learned recently that you want to stay within a 10 to 30% threshold of your credit card limit. Mm. So they want you to owe them a little bit, but not to a point where you're a liability and they believe you're not going to pay it off. And definitely pay more than the minimum balance, because that will do numbers on your credit report. And that is, unfortunately, the currency.
Wait, if you pay more than the minimum payment,
it's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
It is a good thing. Yeah.
And that So how important is your credit rating?
Your credit rating is significant. It's very significant if you are relying on credit checks, which a lot of things depend upon that. Your utility bill, getting a new phone. There's so many different vendors that are doing soft checks, essentially. So unless you plan on paying cash on everything in life, which there are now companies that are determining themselves as cashless.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can't pay cash.
You can't pay cash everywhere anymore. Cash is not essentially king in the century as we're learning. Mm-hmm. It's more of tap and paying with your phone or paying with your watch, paying with some digital resource.
Right.
And so being mindful, like, yep, I'm not probably carrying cash anymore. I'm in a more cashless community. And I want to benefit from advances of getting free money or getting money by spending money.
So if I have a better credit rating, I'm more likely to be able to get a card that will allow me to tap or to get a wallet on my phone. Those things are actually affected by my credit rating?
It's not affected by your credit rating. It's the belief that you are capable of paying your bills. And so when you have a good credit score,
it
determines that, okay, you have a good history of paying your bills. You don't rely on your credit cards as much, or you use a high percentage of your credit and not paying beyond the minimum that's required. So it's showing a way that you are worth the investment.
Ah, so that's what your credit score is. Are you worthy of the investment of the credit card company in you? I see.
And that can go beyond the credit card company. It can be the phone company, which now I recently had to buy a phone.
Yeah.
Because I try to wait as long as I can. And they want you to be in long-term contracts. First, when I mentioned earlier, like, they want you to have between 10% or 30%. So there's no benefit essentially to the company investing in me if I pay off my phone in one sitting. They want me to be around for about 2 years.
Because they want to collect the interest.
Yeah, even if it's just $3.
Huh.
Yeah, and then they'll throw other things to you, like, oh, you can get this streaming service, or you can get some fancy headphones. Yes.
So it's important to be tough and not vulnerable to sales pitches, basically.
Yes.
It seems like that would be something that it would be important for parents to teach kids. Mm-hmm. Don't go for the shiny object.
Yes. And that's for all things. So taking that back to the college conversation, the cost.
Uh-huh.
When you have colleges that a learner is trying to vet on which one to say yes to, look at the entire cost of the attendance. So the tuition, how are you going to get to that institution? How often do you need to get back home? What does the cost of living look like in that particular area? How much are books, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any classes that you are able to take that have open education resources where you don't have to pay fees? Look at the entire thing. So shiny package can apply to your education, your new technology piece, right?
And all your choices.
Yes.
Monet Lewis, we are about out of time. What would you like people to walk away with from our conversation?
I got
30 seconds.
Have conversations with your family members about the cost of life, planning out bills, payments, budgets, and decisions on improving their life, having those conversations together, getting a financial coach in your area, or even uplift yourself to become one. Look on look at YouTube, for example, or go to your local community center to get support and really embrace the unknown about finance so that way you can be confident.
Monet Lewis, thank you. This has been a wonderful conversation. There's so many things, more things I'd like to ask you, but we're out of time. Thanks for listening, dear listeners. Thank you, Monet Lewis, for being here with me on Real Talk. And please, listeners, stay tuned to the Voice of Vashon. You never know what might come next.